Joe Workshop. And Barry Abernathy's on the schedule, and as I was walking over here, he was just driving the gigantic third time out bus onto the premises, and he said, "I'll be over there." So I said, "Oh, it's a blue tent." See, I've never been to Grey Fox. I just went to Winter Hawk a lot, and Winter Hawk had a blue tent over here, so I guess the... Okay, it's still recently. So there's, as you know, the great Bill Keith over there. And I'm Pete Worthing. And funny, they were just, you probably missed the very end of the mandolin workshop where they were playing old Joe Clark in harmony. Anybody was here for the mandolin workshop?
Yeah.
Okay, now we'll do what the banjos might do. What do you think? Is that all right? You want to be tenor man?
Except we can play it in G, right?
Right. We don't have to play it in A, but we could if we wanted. But G is easier because we don't have to retune after dealing with a capo. At least I don't. Yeah. Okay, are we ready to commence? Do you want to play tenor or lead? What do you think?
I like to play it both, but
I'd like to see you do that. you will. How do you want to start?
Any dulcimer players in the crowd?
Nah.
No. Well, this is a modal tune, you know, like Little Maggie, old Joe Clark.
Pretty Polly.
Pretty Polly, June Apple, lots of others. They sound major, but there's that other major chord in there. That's an indication, if you're interested, that it's involving the Mixolydian mode. The dulcimer players would have to know that, because they have to know which fret to start at to get that to happen. And so, with all that technical stuff behind us...
A couple of potatoes there, and then I'll take melody first.
Okay.
Is that right?
I'll just pack up your melody, and then I'll play harmony on the second.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Can you work out that last part in harmony? Well, you want to start in on something that you'd like to talk about and play? Well, let me ask one question. How many people here actually have a banjo and do some banjo playing? Whoa, good. Keep those hands up. Just curious. A little market research here. Yes, majority, I think. And how many of those people play, say, you know, have enough experience to be able to play in jam sessions or play in a band or something like that? Okay, there we go. And the rest of the people are getting underway. Okay. Start.
Well, you know, this is called a workshop, but it's sometimes it's events of this nature are more entertainment than anything else. Since we don't have a blackboard or handouts and a lot of technical talk here, so let's see. I mentioned a couple of tunes that were had some in common. The old Joe Clark and. So maybe I'll just play a little June Apple and a little red-haired boy. Sure.
I'll just accompany Bill with just a rhythm chop just to kind of add a little extra beat in there. Shy, then it'll be over, and he's a remarkable banjo player. If you haven't checked Barry Abernathy out, you'll soon find out. This is what happens when you haven't changed strings recently enough. Nothing sounds quite in tune. Even after the tuner pronounces the main part of the song correct, what's happening is that there's now gunk and little dents in the string, that cause the overtones to be out of tune. If you want to hear what an overtone sounds like, it's like there's, you can do it just by going that on the 12th fret, just lightly touch it and take your finger away. But it's another interesting thing that if you just, I'm going to just play the 4th string and not touch the 1st string, and then I'll mute the 4th string. So the 1st string has a note in it that actually matches that D note on the 4th string. Sorry. So there's a bunch of other notes going on. When you hear that, it's not just one note, it's a bunch of notes going together. And the ones that are the sort of extra tones are surrounding the main note, the fundamental it's called, are the overtones. And when the overtones get out of tune, that means that they're not in tune with the strings that they're supposed to be in tune with. And that's why it takes so long. So, anyway, here's, I'm going to play a faster one. I was just practicing this, and it has one little part that I find hard in the left hand, so I actually make a point of practicing just that. And I got relatively high action, so if I don't want to go, if I don't want that sound, I got to arch my finger over the first string when I'm playing the second and get that little combination. So I make up the little loop exercises. Usually when I try to play that on a day, you know, I haven't fully warmed up or I haven't played this particular tune in a while, it's a good idea for me to just try the hard part and loop it to make sure it's going to come out right. Except I'm never sure if it's going to come out right, but I upped my chances just then. Okay, it's as close as I'm going to get it. I will change my strings before the hot rise set, I promise. Okay, so this one, actually, a lady used to come to my banjo camps, and who's now in her 70s and still makes up tunes and writes for Banjo Newsletter. This is one of her. This is a little quote from one of her first tunes, and then I spun it out my way, and she gave me permission to do that. And I named it after the soccer team that my son was on when he was a little kid, and he named the team the Cheetahs, and my wife was the coach. So this one is called Go Cheetahs Go. It was originally going to be called Go Cheetahs, but Will preferred it to be Go Cheetahs Go. So here it is, Go Cheetahs Go. Other places I should have done that practicing on, but the thing you really don't want to do is derail the rhythm. If a stumble causes you to just plain lose the beat, everybody knows that. If you happen to muff a note in the middle of going, that was about 10 notes a second roughly, and so if one instant teeny little thing happens a little bit muffled, you usually can get away with it to most people, but sure Bill heard everyone and I heard everyone. Anyway, that's why it's a workshop and not a gig, an actual performance, because, you know, willing, if I was going to play that on stage, I'd have practiced it a whole lot more. But I think it's good to, for even really experienced players, to show that, you know, there's obstacles and difficulties along the way. And if you see something approaching perfection on stage, that's because it was very carefully practiced over a long period of time. It's not just a natural gift that somebody has. Like when you hear Bill running through those fiddle tunes like that, there's an amazing amount of work behind that. And then it looks effortless, but it's not effortless in reality. Back to you, Bill.
Gee, thanks, Pete. I feel like the color commentator at a sports event or something. There are three chairs here, and although Barry hasn't made it yet, we hope he will. I see a guy standing in the back of the room that you may have heard before. He played on stage yesterday with his band, Old School Freight Train, or isn't that it's old school, right? Ben Krakauer up there. He came in second at the Merle Fest. And could we get Ben up here to, as a...
Sure. Oh, Barry's here. Oh, quick, while he's getting his banjo out. Quick. That's a pretty brisk walk there. That's looking good.
I didn't see it. There he is. Before I even knew you were here. I'll give you my seat.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Well, Bill just got to introduce Ben here to us.
Okay, no, that's cool. I'll stand up.
The magic solution. This is the Dear Abby solution, as they call it. Dear Abby, my husband always wants to watch this thing on TV, and I want to watch this other thing on TV, and he's so piggy about it and ruining our marriage. What should we do? Get another TV.
Well, Peter, can I ask you something?
Yes.
As Dr. Banjo, what do you think are the most important things that you need to pack in your doctor's bag before you leave our show?
Good question. My picks, my cable. Definitely a set of extra strings. In fact, I brought along extra strings, because if you were to happen to break one, actually I have in every stage outfit, I have lives a first string, because that's the one most likely to break. And in fact, I have a certain kind of string made up, which I was even going to patent it and market it and everything like that, but for various business reasons, it became impossible to actually do. But there's a loop on both ends of my strings. And instead of the hole now in the tuning peg there, I've tapped in just a little screw. Just find a small enough screw to fit right in that hole and stay put. So I just put that loop over the screw head. And the strings that GHS makes me are sized properly. So when I break a string on stage, you just get rid of both parts. There's no unwinding something especially. And then I get the new string out, and it just hooks on to both ends, and I start tightening, and people say, how did you do it so fast? So that's one reason I want it. Also, I don't have to carry clippers, and I never have to thread the needle, which is hard in the middle of a stage show. You might not be just in the mood to find the little hole and put the little string end through. So in any way you can possibly be ready to play right in tune at the beginning of every song, and not create even more banjo jokes by taking a long time to tune, you do it. Now, there's a lot of little onboard tuning devices, and the little one I was using there, it's great because it's onboard and it runs on a battery and it's hardly even noticeable. But the one I bring along without fail to any important gig, or even just about any gig at all, is a big bulky strobe tuner that's about this big and very fragile. And I bring it along, and I pack all sorts of stuff around it in the suitcase. And when I'm on stage with Hot Rise, I have it right by me, and even in the middle of a song, I can check a note, and it gives a completely accurate and completely fast answer in a split second. And then I make the adjustments needed, and as I capo from song to song or change my tuning around, like when you drop the fourth string into C tuning, It will throw out all the other notes because it changes the amount of tension that's on the neck. A big, heavy fourth string will, when it relaxes, will let the bow in the neck sort of flatten out a little bit and changes the other tuning. So if I go into C tuning, I have to tune five strings real fast, and I try to get it done before the applause is done on the previous number, but if I still need time, I let Nick, our MC, know I need about 20 more seconds, and then he always thinks of something to say. Okay, that's enough of that. Let's get some. Ben, would you like to go? You were invited, so why don't we get you to play us a tune, and we'll get over to Barry.
All right. This is a tune called Angelina Baker. Yeah.
Judges of that contest, and I do remember how much everybody seemed to like that tune when you played it. He won himself a nice banjo for that too. Good job, Ben. Barry, what we've been doing is this really weird thing where we maybe talk about playing a tune and then we play a tune. It's the show and tell thing. So I'd like to introduce Barry. Barry has played in a few of the top groups in bluegrass. I guess counting, do I have three right people full time bands?
I started in '93, I think it was the third time out, and then went with Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver in '94, just about a year difference, and then started this band in first of 1999.
Mountain Heart.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing a good job. He's got one of these super right hands that just you can depend on it.
depend on it driving.
That's right. You know what? Last time I saw him, it was only about 20 minutes ago, and he's driving a dang bus. grabbing a steering wheel is not the best thing
to do for your
hands. I've actually given up, but, you know, if it's a few days before a gig, I won't use a shovel, I won't use an axe, you know. Even riding a bicycle and you're grabbing the handlebars, you have to be... but he has a different kind of left hand than most people have, and in most polite company, it wouldn't be appropriate to mention it, but Barry's all right with mentioning it because it's pretty obvious when he's playing that he has to do a lot of stuff different because he doesn't have a full left hand. So any of you people who say, my hands are too small, or this finger doesn't work so well, this is a guy I believe might just quiet you down about that.
Say, use your thumb.
Use your thumb. So a lot of, Barry does an awful lot of stuff with his thumb. And, you know, he had to invent it all. I don't think there's any instruction books on how to play banjo with your left thumb as your...
It's pretty obvious when you hear me play. No instruction.
No, I mean, really, what the cool thing is, and he wouldn't have had all these gigs because he's good considering that. He has the gigs because he's good. And anyway, so it's entertaining to watch him because he had to invent a lot of techniques that made it possible for him to be a pro banjo player. And he's in some pretty... those are three very heavy-duty groups. So, anyway, take it away.
Gosh, I don't know where to begin. I guess I could start by tuning.
Well, any tune you like to play, or maybe just some breaks on tunes that you like playing, whatever is good for you.
Play a little bit up on the Blue Ridge version to it. First thing I did after grabbing the steering wheel, maybe I should have played Amazing Grace or something.
That's bus hands. She's got the bus hands. Sometimes when you wake up in the morning and the joints just aren't ready to move, that's sausage fingers.
Yeah, my God.
You have some sausages and it makes it worse.
Yeah, cold sausage fingers.
Well, you know, I have a strategy for that when somebody, you know, somebody knows I have my banjo with me and has me get out of an ice-cold car and have them play it. I just happen to have it with me. They say, oh, play something. I play Cripple Creek because that I find really, really easy, and I'm probably not going to mess it up. And if they don't know that much about banjo, they won't say, oh, that old thing. They'll just say, oh. That's catchy, you know.
Yeah. I always try to hide somewhere about an hour before we play. I try to hide and just touch the banjo, just play and hit the strings and a few just, you know, some rolls and just something, you know, just real light. Just take it easy. If I get it out and start bearing down on it, it seems like it just times me up worse. I don't know how y'all are, but that seems like it makes me worse. But anyway, when you got a 1 o'clock workshop and you're there at 15 after or 20 after, you just got to do what you got to do.
True enough. And, I was going to say it's kind of hard to hide when you're practicing banjo. So you're going to hide with the banjo or something. Here's a question.
Well, if I'm having to drive to a show and I know I'm going to be playing, I'll I'll just sit and work my hand and the piano exercises, just make, I don't know what it's called, but for people where you make your fingers kind of work individually, it's I'll sit on the head of my banjo and just like pick up, you know, put three down and two down and make them, you know, kind of work individually. Seems to help pretty good, and just snap my fingers or whatever and play on my knee, just different things. And the best thing to do, though, is get your banjo out and be familiar with it. But if you can't, you know, you just do what you can. And definitely driving's not the best thing. Or sleeping.
It's usually a choice, either drive or sleep. So.
One of the two, yeah. I can drive and get up every now and then and watch Jimmy sleep. He's pretty good at sleeping.
What about when your band works up a new tune and you have to get your banjo solo together? How do you approach that?
Most of the time, I'm fortunate. Most of the time, I already know what we're going to be working up before we get there, and I get a head start on them. But you know, it seems like when we're working up a new tune, we'll play it, maybe chart it out. We'll have the words written down, and we might chart it out and try to have some kind of rough in as we go. And we'll get halfway through it and stop, and halfway through it and stop till we get till everybody is familiar with the song, and then we'll work on it a little while, and then we might stop, and somebody might go get something to drink, or go get a chew of tobacco, or one of them boys, I think Clay smoked a cigarette, so whatever anybody's going to do, and take a break, and then you'll kind of find everybody individually going off and working on maybe their solo or working on something, or if they've got twin or unison parts, you know, working on together.
Well, what's an example of one of the most recent solos that you had to work out on the banjo, and maybe you could show how you found your way to what you're now doing?
Actually, the most recent song we've been trying to work up is probably something I can't play, but Jimmy wrote a tune, and we hadn't even got a name for it yet. But just trying to hum the melody of something, getting melody in your head is the best way of being able to do something. If you know where it's at, if you hum the melody, you can find it. I'm bad to depend on Jimmy if he writes it to hum it for me, but he wrote a, I remember. Tough one. Just the melody, the pick out single notes like that is real tough for me to do with going with your thumb and just trying to get from one note to the other with your left hand. We worked that one up a few days ago, and I actually could play it at the time. But stuff like that, is, you know, you go off by yourself and hum the melody and try to find it on the banjo, and it seems like everybody does that. That's about the only way I know to work up a new tune is just if you know the melody and try to hum it to yourself.
What kind of things do you do to kind of ornament it, you know, pretty it up this or that way?
Gosh, to be honest with you, I don't have a necessarily a routine. It just seems like whatever I do or don't do just kind of happens, as far as prettying up anything. It's pretty much with me, it's either melody or just try to get through a chord. I'm bad. I always use the line, go to the one. I'll be at the one chord, boys. Y'all catch me back around at the one. Sometimes there's several songs we do that we've done. I know we recorded the song Big Sky on the last project, and it's at an F sharp minor. It's the home chord on it, which is not a banjo key, but especially if you got one finger to play it with. Sometimes I just go, you know, sometimes a one or a four works against something else. So a lot of times I'll play something against something else, you know, that'll work. And if I have to omit a string or two here and there and do things like that, I try to do that. But that's usually how I try to get
just,
by.
Just to clarify a little terminology there, I was just telling my bluegrass jam camp this week that they have to learn the number system to speak the language, and when he says get back to the one, that's the basic chord of the song, the key that you're in. So if you're in G, G is the one. And the four, if you go up the G scale to the fourth note, that'll be a C. So when he's talking about a C chord here, he would call it the four. But that, the numbers work regardless of the key. It doesn't depend on the key.
And you don't have to be smart to learn them. It's pretty basic once you get used to it.
All right. I'm just looking at the time, and we still have a bit of time, but Bill, why don't you take a turn when you get a chance here?
Sure. I just have to be somewhere at 2, so I don't have a watch.
I've got a watch, and it's at about 20 to 2.
Oh, okay. Thanks. The whole idea of ornamenting and figure what are you going to play against in a certain tune. You can start with the tune and then see what fits and what works. Or there's another way to do it, and that's to start with at the other end of the other end of the stick. By that I mean, well, I took a technical approach to the banjo and started learning a tune in G, and then realized that those are the notes of the G scale. So I messed around with the G scale and same notes. So the other end of the stick, as far as I'm concerned, is getting real familiar with the notes and then shuffling them around to make different tunes. And there's the whole scale, which people call do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, or Christmas Carol too. It's a major scale. There's a lot of tunes that work in a shorter scale. In the key of G, but they don't use all the notes of the regular scale. They just use 5 of them. And that's why we got a fancy name for that, called the pentatonic scale, which is that famous guitar run that I think the first time that was recorded was in the intro to the Mule Skinner Blues, the first time Bill Monroe recorded that tune. And there's a long guitar intro to that tune. And as far as I know, that's the first time that lick was used. And you know who played it? Bill Monroe played the guitar in that recording. So we call it the flat run, the Lester flat run, but it's probably Bill Monroe that did it.
Well, you know what? I was listening to a Dixieland record from the 30s, and the saxophone went bom ba da ba da ba da.
Well, that is the 5-tone scale. You hear it. It turns out that there are, we got 12 notes to start with. And so we've got 12 kinds of any kind of scale, and there's 12 of these too. But there's 4 of them that really fit on the banjo. And one of them, or 8th of January in C. And also you get the key of F. Tune in B flat. Okay, what's the relative minor of B flat? Yeah. So when it came time to play Kentucky Mandolin in G minor, if you retune the second string, then all your chords go off. You know, you can't remember the chords anymore. So. Familiar tune in G major sound. Well, there's that B flat scale, and here's the same tune. It using the same this hand position here. Tune in B flat, all using the same set of notes. So that's
depends on how many fingers you got, which one you do, right?
I do have a question, a couple of questions. Why don't you take this guy first?
It's probably a bit unfair, but a question. But say at the moment of improvisation, not a lead that you've worked on ahead of time, but at any moment of improvisation, do you think would you say that you hear the notes that you're about to play in your head? Or could you describe maybe what the mental process might be that's going on at the moment of the improvisation?
Great question. What can answer?
You know, it is a good question, and there's a lot of things get in the way when you're in a performing situation. And what I do is when I'm at home and working on stuff and actually, you know, then I think long and hard about it and take it apart and count frets and name notes and figure stuff out and know what chords are in there and different inversions for them. And that's a hunting process, and that's really the way the learning thing is. Then I try to absorb that and get totally around that information. And then when I go out to play, I make a point of thinking about absolutely nothing. Nothing. If I catch myself thinking about something, I turn it off.
Say, what's the state of mind just before you strike a note?
Wow.
How's my hair?
Expect it. No, it's just.
Sometimes say, I hear that, I gotta go, I wanna hit a B flat, say, That's the note I want to, and you consciously.
First, I don't think in absolutes like that. It depends on the key we're in. And I don't think about specific notes, and I don't think ahead, because if you think ahead, you'll make a mistake now. If you make a mistake, you don't think about it, because then you'll make another one. You're thinking in, so you can't think about the past or the future. And
you'd be here now.
I'm not putting you on. There's a really good book on this subject, and it addresses problems that people have when they get out in front of people to play, and why they freeze up, or why they can't do as well. If there's people watching, they can do in their own room. It's a great book called Effortless Mastery by a guy named Kenny Werner. And he says, don't catch yourself thinking, how do I sound? Am I in tune? I wonder if they like me. Those are all destructive processes. No, laugh. Those are destructive to the creative process. You really do have to learn your stuff first, get your technique ready, and then get out of the way and let this work for you.
I saw this quote in a magazine, something that Roy Clark said, and I made a point to absorb it. You know, Roy Clark is not known as the banjo genius. He's a very fine musician. But he said this great thing, which is, if I think about it, I lost it. In other words, if I think, I've lost it already. You know, same subject, you know. But one thing I'll tell you is, in so many words, just don't think ahead and behind like Bill just said, but I just try to train my mind right into what's about to happen, like, what is this? And if I say I just want to get back to home, I'll aim for the third string, which is the G, which is home, if I'm playing a G. And sometimes I say, oh, I want to hear some high notes, you know, or it would be cool to put in a pull-off, sort of. There's a little spasm in there. If you liken playing music to conversation, you know, everybody improvises when they're conversing. You know, you couldn't possibly describe your job in 25 words the same way two times in a row. It would not come out the same. And that's because you're so familiar with language. If you start a sentence one way, you'll finish it a different way. If you start it, you know, different ways, that you know how to finish a sentence. And it's a lot like that with music. You sort of go into certain places that sort of determine what else is going to happen, and you just follow it. And a lot of people would say, play the melody. Just plain play the melody. This is obviously Barry's approach. And if you play with Jimmy Martin or an awful lot of the main band leaders of all time, they don't like it almost if you don't play the melody. And when Bill found ways to play melody on fiddle tunes, Bill Monroe loved that very much, you know. And he was kind of upset if people didn't seem to know the melody of the tune and just play licks over the melody instead of the melody. But a lot of people have gigantic bags of licks, and they're just saying, which C lick haven't I played lately? And they throw it in. And I'm not saying that sounds bad, but it loses a little focus on what the job is at the time, you know. Enough said on that for me.
Can I just add something?
Yeah.
Phil Keith is known as the innovator of melodic style banjo playing, and Bill Monroe recognized that in Phil Keith. And you hear people talking about the Monroe style of mandolin playing. Well, there's also the Keith style of banjo playing, and so we're really fortunate to have Phil Keith.
And this year is the 40th anniversary of the 40th anniversary of his tenure with Monroe. And Tony Rice and I were talking just last night, and he said, from his point of view, Bill is the sort of the father of Newgrass, because he, within a traditional context, blew open a lot of doors, and then a lot of people got to walk through those doors. And that's a pretty good concept, I think. Bill's going to have to leave soon.
One question.
Can you talk a little bit about fretted fifth string? I'm thinking specifically of something like clinging vine. How do you approach
fretting the fifth string is the question.
The clinging vine is sort of an exception. It's a tune I wrote in E flat. And actually, the way it started was I took the B-flat pentatonic scale, and just raised one note of it, and it's the E-flat, so... I fret the fifth string in there, that's the high E. There are times when, real nice tune that you may have heard called Banjo Signal. Don Reno recorded it. Actually, it was written by Smiley Hobbs, real great banjo player, mandolin player, fiddle player, guitar player, and singer. And he worked with Don Reno for a while. And he plays that by fretting the fifth string. And actually, there's a pair of notes there running down. And Scruggs does the ground speed. Well, the same two pairs of notes on the first two strings rather than on the fifth. That's the first time I ran into fretting the fifth string. A lot of people wrap the thumb around it. Melodic stuff is essential to fret the fifth string too. It's all a lot of fifth string stuff. It's almost easier to get the note on instead of going across to the first string, do an inside roll and catch the fifth string with the same note, the same fret. So that's fretting the fifth string.
I hate to break in, Bill, but in 4 minutes it'll be 2:00.
I'm sorry, I got
Bill is one of those guys where if he's not busy and you just walk up to him and ask him a banjo question, he'll give you a good-sized answer for that. So, and he's doing the grassroots stage tomorrow. Look on your schedule. The workshop is supposedly over at this time, but I understand the next time slot is open for a while. They haven't arrived. So I'll continue this if anybody wants to continue this. And, you know, I don't know if Barry can meet Sandstater or Wanstater. Yeah, he needs to go back to the bus. But if anybody wants to hear a little more banjo playing and ask a question, I will. Barry Abernathy and Barry Tuckow right there. I'll play a tune. This is my most recently made up tune, and I'm not quite sure of the name for it, so if you have suggestions, I'd like them. I'll just wait for everybody to do their moving around so you can see and hear it better if you want. I'm tune right now? You've got to yell that, right?
Yeah.
I don't blame you. Okay.
How much do you ask for the melody to
come? Most of the time. I think it's just because Earl did it that way, or does it that way, I should say. You copy so much from Earl, it's like the guy you learn English from. You know, you just have to do it that way. If you're going to make up some new words, great, but you're still speaking English, you know. So, it depends, you know. It really depends on what you want. Sometimes, like... That's how loud I played that thumb. It wasn't the melody. That's another one. It's subsidiary to the melody, which is being played on other fingers, and that, it just depends. Because you try to get away from thinking about the technique that you're using. You know, when you say your name, you don't know what your mouth is doing. You don't know what your tongue and your teeth and your lips are doing. A speech analyst could tell you, but that's not the way you learned it. You learned it by hearing it and saying it back, and then they said it back and forth, and your ears have some great connection to the musical part of your brain, and that sends a message to your mind, I mean to your fingers, and then you just obey. So a lot of the stuff that you do, I mean, if you do an imitation of somebody, you don't know what's going on, you just hear their voice in your mind and you reproduce it. So that's the way I think most people play music, and it's actually, I think it's a very rare person who has the technical prowess that Bill has in terms of the way he thinks about music. He sees this gigantic web that he can dance around on, and of course Barry doesn't have access to that web because he only has that thumb mainly to work with. So he makes do, and of course he's got a great gig in Mountain Heart. And there's times when the fifth string is normally, which is a thumb string, obviously, sometimes it's usually played in a blending kind of way. The thumb is pretty far out from the bridge, and it doesn't ping that hard. But when I was working on Turkey in the Straw, I started saying, why doesn't this really sound like Turkey in the Straw? And it's because when my thumb played an important note on the fifth string, right on the beat, it was playing it the way I usually play, which is too quiet. So I said, I'm going to have to emphasize that note. And I practiced a loop featuring an emphasized note. And I found just for that one note, I'd pull my thumb back closer to the bridge. And that's the kind of detail work you do when you're really trying to get something together.
Would you demonstrate that?
Well... Sorry. I'm terrible at melodic stuff. There, is that good? If I was going to do it, if I knew I was going to do it, I would have practiced it. Man, would it have been great. It would have been just so great. Just so sorry you weren't there when I did know it really well a couple of years ago. But anyway, yes, another question.
It's like half the tune request, half the question.
Okay. Yeah.
Those are both kind of solo, and you always seem to have really good rhythm. So when you practice those, do you concentrate on making the rhythm really hot and then play one?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you my little metronome story. You know, I always knew it was important to play good timing. I mean, generally that's understood, although there was years when I was really into what my good Hot Rise buddy used to call doodly-doo, which is... see how many different notes, be surprising as much as you can. And there's some great players who play in that style, in the doodly-doo style. And Charles would respect those people, but he says, there's an awful lot, this festival has too much doodly-doo, you know. And so I was doing that, and then I heard J.D. Crowe one night, that was actually 30 years ago. And I said, that's the reason I started playing banjo, was the way he was sounding. And if you talk to J.D., I went right up and started talking to him after the set, and he said the word timing about every five words. He's all about timing. And he could listen to a guy for a whole set, and then if he makes a timing mistake, he'll say, that guy you don't have the timing, you know. And if you listen to J.D., you know what he's talking about. He's got it. And that is a Jimmy Martin thing. Most anybody who's ever played with Jimmy Martin's got that timing thing, and you have to listen to Jimmy's guitar, and that's your metronome. But then in conversation with John Hartford, he was talking about all this. He'd gotten into using a metronome. And he learned that from Buddy Emmons, who's one of the world's greatest musicians. He's the steel guitar player, which is an amazingly complicated instrument. And he said, well, Buddy Emmons sits around the metronome. He just plays against the metronome. And he started doing it, and he's liking it. I'm thinking, John Hartford needs a metronome? I mean, he has such perfect time. Oh, that's right. That's why he has perfect time. So I got out the metronome, and in fact, I later bought a rhythm machine, a little thing that was small enough to put in my case, and you could carry headphones with it. And most pro musicians I know do metronome timing. And you just do that enough, and after a while, you just know what the beat's going to be like. And it doesn't mean that's the only way to play. Like if you actually timed out flat and scruggs, there's times where the whole band relaxes going into a vocal and then charges back up to timing, but it's always locked in because they're listening to each other. And there's one Hot Rise cut that started out at 144 beats a minute and ended up at 156 beats a minute, which was very scary when we go in mixing, going from the end of the tune back to the beginning and say, you know, and I finally timed it, I said 14 beats a minute difference. And then we listened really hard for where that happened, and we couldn't find it. That was good, because we were just in a constant slow acceleration that way. So anyway, you care enough, you know, one of the main things about musicianship is if you care enough about it, if you think it's important, and you believe in your heart that it's important to playing good music, that caring will lead you to a whole set of things. You saw what Barry had to do compared to what Bill Keith had to do. Two completely different banjo players. With totally different mindsets, and it's great to get some of each of their mindset when you're out there. But it's, this is me, by the way, tuning it to C, which is the Ruthie key. Yeah, they're almost here, right? Okay. This is what I really love, is just being with people and playing bluegrass. If it hadn't been for some lucky breaks, I'd be a sociologist and this would be my weekend, and I'd probably be here either way, but... We actually, in the record, put it down to B flat, but using the same tuning lowered, because Alan O'Brien, who is the singer of the song on the record, preferred B flat. So that even lowers. Pitch, and this is having to retune all four, five strings. A full step, yes, in B flat when you hear it, but it looks like this. Well, this is just standard banjo tuning, except I've lowered the fourth string to a C. So then you just take each note, the C becomes B flat, the G becomes F. Just one, two frets down the scale, that's the name of each note. My mom died in 1992, and my father was just, you know, really alone. And so I was hanging out with him, and he liked it when I just mess around on the banjo. He used to like that when I was learning, when I was a kid living in the house. So I just started goofing around in C, because it gives you such a nice low sound on the banjo. Sorry about this. And I found myself making up a tune, and this is it. Thank you. and singing in this key. I usually do it in G if I'm performing it, but I just love the way the banjo sounds in this key. So I'll sing it an octave too low. I just met a special girl, makes me want to tell the world. Run through the street singing Ruthie. She's so pretty and she's smart, I think I lost my heart. Can't help thinking about my Ruthie. Walk through the street singing Ruthie. Took a shine to me, treats me like family. Think she wants me to marry her Ruthie. But my good family says she's not good for me. They don't know about my Ruthie. They don't know the treasure of my Ruthie. That song is the only song that ever went to number one on the Bluegrass Radio Hit Parade that was one singer and one instrument. It's usually bluegrass bands that make it up there. So I'm really grateful to Alan O'Brien for singing that on the record. Sign off now? All right. Oh no, not them.
I'll play a real fast one, real quick. It'll be over by the time I...
If you... A little bit of that tune got into the Bluegrass movie, one of these dudes is all over the place in the Bluegrass movie. The other one is quite a few places there, too. Bluegrass Journey. Anyway... if there are any 14-year-old boys in the crowd, this is for you, because they always ask me, what's the fastest thing you play? So this is it. It's my version of John Henry. ¶¶